Welcome to the Empire Builders Podcast, teaching business owners the not-so-secret techniques that took famous businesses from mom-and-pop to major brands. Stephen Semple is a marketing consultant, story collector, and storyteller. I'm Stephen's sidekick and business partner, Dave Young. Before we get into today's episode, a word from our sponsor, which is, well, it's us. But we're highlighting ads we've written and produced for our clients. So here's one of those.
I'm Rick Showers from Noble RV, and you'd probably think our stores are quiet this time of year, but there's more going on here than you might expect. Last fall, we had literally hundreds of people bring their quality used RVs for us to sell, and it's our job to get them working perfectly and looking their best come spring.
Sounds like a year-round commitment, Rick.
That's right, Bob. Our RV maintenance and service technicians are hard at work all four seasons. In the summer, we're making repairs quickly so you can get back to the great outdoors. In the winter, we're getting the new ones ready for their next adventure. I mean new to you, of course. We only sell used RVs at Noble.
Used RVs are even better than new ones, right, Rick?
That's right, Bob. It's all the fun at a fraction of the price of new. And here's a pro tip. If you want to beat the rush in the spring, you can see the best ones right now.
And that's Noble.
NobleRV.ca.
Hey, David, we're going to do something different here.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Because you have a special history with this company, so we're going to talk about Cabela's.
Okay.
Because of the fact that Cabela's started in your little town in Nebraska.
Kinda.
Yeah. So we're going to do this completely unrehearsed, Dave running with things, and I'll fill in.
You're going to Google dates and names in the background?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. So let's give that let's give that a roll. Cabela's is an interesting story.
It really is, and it still is a brand, right? It's still around, but it's owned by the Bass Pro Shop guy, Johnny, whatever his name is. I didn't get to know him because that's a Missouri thing. So Sydney, Nebraska.
We don't like talking about those people.
Well, so he came in and bought it up and saved the company. That's part of the story. But Sydney, Nebraska was the home of Cabela's, the family and the corporate headquarters for years and years. It started, though, in a town about 30 miles away, a town of Chapel, Nebraska.
Right. Yes.
1962.
Well, actually, you're really good. It's according to what I have here is December 1961. But so, yeah, 1962 is a month later.
62 is, 62 is what was always on their logo.
Okay, cool.
And the
cool
shirts you could buy, like okay. Cabela's EST 1962. So, December 61. So Chapel, Nebraska, their dad is in the furniture business.
And, I didn't realize he was in the furniture business. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
And the story, as I recall, is that the two of the sons, Dick and Jim, it was Dick that went to the furniture show with Dad in Chicago, right? Where you see all the furniture that you're going to buy for your store, and you make deals with the manufacturers, and all that stuff arrives then over the course of the next year. Well, he found a company that he bought like 1,000 Chinese-made fishing flies.
Yeah.
Little flies for fly fishing.
Right. And what I have here is cost him like $45.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Didn't know what he was going to do with them, but he bought 1,000 of them and brought them home. Takes out a little ad in a Wyoming Hunter's newspaper or newsletter. All right.
Sports the, Afield is the name of the
Sports
name
Afield.
Of the name.
And the yeah. ad, if so, yeah, gosh, now I feel like I'm doing this story and Steven's fact checking me live. So this is, I think, one of the from an ad writing perspective and a business making an offer. This is actually the pivotal moment in the genesis of the Cabela story is that they ran this ad in Sports Afield. And nothing happened.
Right.
Right.
Like, I think they got like one response or something like that.
Yeah, but the copy, but like, the yeah. offer, it was, it's the offer. The offer was buy, I think it was 12 hand-tied fishing flies for $1 free shipping.
Right.
Right. So send us $1. And you could, in those days, people would just put $1 in an envelope and send it off.
Right. Yes.
Right. And that didn't really create desire in people's hearts. They didn't want to buy 12 fishing flies for a dollar.
Right.
So they ran, and nothing happened. Maybe in, you know, one order, they changed the offer to 12 free hand-tied fishing flies. Send a dollar for postage and handling. And they sold all of them.
Wow. Amazing, eh?
All right. The money is exactly the same. But when you put the value on the fishing flies at a dollar for 12, it makes them seem like they don't have much value. When you change it to free,
right,
and you just need me to send you a dollar to mail them to me, like, oh, I don't know what the value is, but I get 12 of them free. I get 12 of them for free.
Right.
All I got to do is help you ship them to me. On the face of it, it's crazy, right? It's not logical.
It's not logical. It should make no difference. And here's the thing I find that's also really interesting about that. In the world today, it's almost flipped. If I was going to guess today, if you were running that offer today, the free shipping would be more powerful than the free product. Right. The point is, on the surface, it's exactly the same offer.
Yeah. Yeah. The same amount of money. Yeah. It's a buck. It's the same amount of money from the customer. It's the same amount of money to the company. And when they changed the offer, everything changed. Now, from there, they just started buying more like sporting goods kinds of things and writing more offers.
Right.
So in this little town of Chapel, Nebraska, about 1,000 people at the time, probably, like Dad has the Cabela's Furniture Store. And by the way, to the best of my knowledge, that store is still there.
The furniture store?
Yeah, it was a third brother that ended up in the furniture business, took over Dad's business, and the other two brothers, Dick and Jim, set out to take over the world of sporting goods. They had basically used up all the store frontage in this little town of Chapel and were needing a bigger place because there just wasn't any more room in that town for them or people to work for them. And so I'm not sure just exactly when, but in the 60s, later on in the 60s, they made a deal with the city of Sydney. A John Deere distributorship had gone under, right? I think they just probably got consolidated out. So there was this big three-story brick building that had been a John Deere parts distributor place, and it was just sitting empty, and the city needed to do something. And so they made a deal with Cabela's to move into that building. And that's then for the next several decades where they ran Cabela's. And they ended up opening their first retail store in there, but they were primarily...
They were catalogs, weren't they?
Until the internet hit, they were a catalog company. Yeah,
I was
going to
say, I thought they were a catalog company. Yeah.
I don't know when the internet started, but before the internet started, like, they were printing more pages of catalogs than JCPenney.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Of all kinds, like you could get the Cabela's deep sea fishing catalog. You could get their hunting catalog. You could get their guns and ammo and archery. They had all kinds of different catalogs for their different types of consumers that they sold to. And then every year they had the master catalog, which was a big hardbound edition of everything they sold. Like
hardbound.
And it was the size of a dictionary, right? It was big.
Wow.
And so they operated that out of that building till, I would guess their first what became known as the destination stores that they started doing was opened in Sydney in the late 80s.
Well, Cabela's, and the interesting thing is the Cabela's stores are really quite the destination because they've got like aquariums. I've heard of some that have shooting ranges and archery ranges in them.
What they figured out is that people wanted an experience when they went to a store, right?
Yes.
And so their store in Sydney started that as you wandered around in that store. And again, it was just a like a weird store that was cobbled into the front of this former distributorship building. So it had multi levels. There was a basement, there was a main floor, there were stairs that went up to another little part. Didn't have near the square footage, but they also had things like this giant stuffed polar bear. and lots of taxidermy even around that store. And so they carried that theme through when they started building these destination stores. But I remember as a kid, getting a picture taken with the big polar bear in the Cabela's store, and that would end up being on the front of their catalog. So they became known for those kinds of things. But when I was a kid, Stephen, you could buy a basketball or some ice skates, any kind of a baseball bat and a glove. Back in those days, they had their catalog business, but for the town they were in, they were the sporting goods store.
Right.
Right. They were the place you went to buy any kind of sporting goods.
And it's really interesting when you think about sort of making a place of destination, because then it attracts people to the store. But there is this other idea, and I'll never forget when I was working in the investment industry, there was a company that was going public here in Canada that had really modeled itself after Barnes & Noble. Here it was called Chapters, but they really were copying the Barnes & Noble methodology. And one of the things they talked about was studies had been done. And look, IKEA understands this. The longer you stay in the store, the more you purchase, and likely you are to purchase. So this whole idea of entertaining people when they're in the store is you actually want people hanging out. The longer they hang out, the more likely they are to buy something or buy something more.
And so I think for 20 years, we've been, now and then I'll get asked to do a presentation on creating word of mouth.
Right.
Right. And the way you create word of mouth is...
Stay tuned. We're going to wrap up this story and tell you how to apply this lesson to your business right after this.
Hey, Rick, do you ever feel like, yeah, I do. Spinning my wheels, getting no traction.
I was going to say, like, we're part of a computer simulation, you know, like the Matrix.
Oh, I guess.
Your business still isn't growing, huh?
Nope.
Working harder, spending more, going down rabbit holes, but not growing.
Exactly. Going through the motions, like Neo at the beginning.
Well, you could talk to the host.
The guy on this podcast?
Sounds like he's figured out all the secrets for growth.
I mean, these stories are interesting.
It doesn't cost anything to talk to him.
That's true. Maybe I should get plugged in.
Come on, do it. I want to hear what your ads sound like when they play at the beginning of this podcast.
When you say stuff like that, it does sound like we're in the Matrix.
Watch this. Take the blue pill, Dave!
Let's pick up our story where we left off, and trust me, you haven't missed a thing.
Right. And the way you create word of mouth is when Roy first started talking about it, he talked about three different techniques, architectural, kinetic, and generous.
Right.
And really, I think if you break it down, they're all three categories of what I would call magnanimity. And when Cabela's built these destination stores, they knew what they were doing and they hit it on all three accounts. So let's look at generosity first. They already had ingrained at that time, and I think they've stepped away from this now, but their mantra was basically a lifetime guarantee on everything you bought from them.
Right.
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 No, and nobody undersells Cabela's was one of their slogans, but they had this guarantee that if it fails or you're not happy with it, bring it back and we'll replace it.
Right.
Their returns department was always pretty hopping.
Right.
And they were just generous about it.
Right.
I used to joke with, I knew somebody that worked in the returns department. I used to joke, like, if I came in and just pulled some pocket lint out of my pocket and said, yeah, I bought these socks 12 years ago and I'm not happy with them. They're like, yeah, they'd probably march you off to get some new socks.
Right.
So it was that level of, hey, take the customer's word. There's always going to be a knucklehead that takes advantage of us. But for the most part, millions of people are going to be happy with what they bought from us.
Right.
Most businesses don't understand that you build that knucklehead factor in, right? There are going to be people that take advantage of you. Don't let that stop you from being generous.
Yes.
Because if you want to be known for generous, you've got to just take the knuckleheads into account. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, they're the ones that are going to spread the bad news that their whole promise isn't really what it says it is.
Or you get stuck putting all the fine detail in, which really...
Yeah, you put all these loopholes in and say, oh, well, I'm sorry, but that's obviously not the right kind of lint to be.
And it's interesting. So when we talk about these things, a lot of these things are done to build trust, and you get trust by extending trust. And the moment you start putting all these disclaimers in to protect yourself from the customer, you're basically saying to the customer, I don't trust you, but you should trust me.
Yeah.
And exactly. That's what really weakens it. Yeah.
So you have a policy that just has generosity baked into it. And yes. You'll see that, you know, if there's a restaurant that just has a policy of, hey, you know what, dessert is on the house in our restaurant. That's just what we do.
Right.
You can become known for being generous.
Right. That's interesting.
The other two, that part of it was baked in before they built the destination store. But when they built the destination store, the other two pieces of the word of mouth puzzle are architectural and kinetic. So let's look at architectural. Their first destination store and all the rest, at least the ones that weren't, in some cases, they bought buildings that pre-existed and moved a store into them. But for the ones that they built from the ground up, they look like hunting lodges that were built in the heyday of Yellowstone.
Yes, right? They sure do.
You can see if you're in a flat state like Nebraska, you can see it from 10 miles away as you're heading down the interstate highway. And when you get there, it's like, this looks magnificent, right? And you drive up and there's a pond and there's always a bigger than life brass sculpture out front and a circular drive. You just feel like you've arrived somewhere and now it's time to go in and see what this is all about. And so that architectural generosity continues on the inside. You could sell all this stuff in a store like a Walmart.
You could, yep.
Right? You could decorate it to just look like the inside of a Walmart, barren ceiling and fluorescent bulbs and flat, long, linear aisles, and stock it with the exact same things. You could sell that stuff.
For sure.
But that's not what they decided to do. They wanted to create an architectural treat.
Yes.
And so when you go into one of those Cabela's stores, and especially the early, early times, it was like walking through down a trail in the woods.
And look, and it put you in that frame of mind that's way easier to imagine using the stuff.
Architecturally wise, the inside of those buildings was like a cathedral to the outdoors.
Right, yes.
Right? Huge roof. And then they would build a mountain inside of it. And full of taxidermy. And so my kids used to call it the dead zoo because because you could see just about every kind of animal.
Right.
Beautifully done, right? I remember when they built the mountain at the store in Sydney, I think the guys that made the mountain, that created it, were the same people that do all the mountains and fake things at Disneyland, right? They hired those guys.
I was going to say, I bet you they hired those guys. Now, there was a third thing that you said.
Kinetic. So kinetic is movement, like especially the architectural and the kinetic aspect. No place does those two things better than Las Vegas.
Right.
Right. Starting with the volcano at the Mirage. Was it the Mirage? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then continuing on with the fountains and all
Bellagio,
the things that you see at the Bellagio. Mm-hmm. So this mountain wasn't just a mountain. It had a stream in it.
Right. Right.
And so there's water flowing.
Yes.
And they made sure that there were places in the stores that you could actually touch and feel the sporting equipment. Some of the stores have shooting ranges. Some have just other places where games, there's a little shooting gallery in some of the stores. I think the one they built down here in Buda had that. So things that move, things that are architecturally take your breath away, and generosity. Oh, the other generous thing was, and this started in Sydney well before they had their big store. They would do a sidewalk sale every year. So remember, they're sending out millions of catalogs, and they've got a return policy that's super generous. So they're always going to get things returned to them.
Yes.
What happens to that stuff? What happens to the mountains of stuff that get returned? They store it all up.
Oh, and then they do.
And once a weekend in the summertime, they have the Cabela's sidewalk sale. And it in Sydney, Nebraska, it was an event.
Right. So they're People selling all the stuff that's in return.
Yeah. They set up a giant tent. It always just blew our minds because even in the days before the destination store, people would drive from everywhere and camp in line. Like this was before you could camp to buy tickets to a concert.
Right.
People were getting their place in line a week in advance, and they would watch the Cabela's employees stock the tent. Like there were people that would sit in their tent or on their lawn chairs with binoculars.
So they knew which tent that they wanted to go to.
Watching the Cabela's people stock it, and they'd know which tent they were going to go to get. And so there were huge bargains, huge. Yeah. It would be a free-for-all. Like when they started letting people into the tent on that Saturday morning, it was just madness. And they moved that out to the store. And then they also created a thing, their bargain cave in the store. So not everything. I think mostly the bargain cave was things that got returned to the store, not things that got returned to the catalog place. But there were always great deals to be had. Like they would mark things down, you know, just let's just get this out of the store kind of prices.
Thing I don't want to lose sight of, this is the one that to me is really super interesting, is going back to that first offer.
Yeah.
Because it would have been very easy. It could have been very, very, very easy to go, okay, they're not selling for a dollar. Let me try 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I'm just going to change that way the dollar changes hands. It would have been like, that shows a real, you know, testing of offer. Because what I find a lot of times is the offer doesn't work, we're really quick to go, well, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Not just changing how I word it, changing how the offer is put together can have a huge, huge, huge impact. And offers are weird, right? Like they really are require testing and massaging and sometimes going back at it and recognizing that, yeah, doesn't make sense. Does not make sense changing the dollar from this category to this category has an impact, but it does.
Yeah.
And so that's my hats off to them in terms of having the boldness to just go back at the market and just change it.
Well, and you think about the millions of products and millions of catalog pieces of copy that they had to write. There were some great copywriters in that company. And I tell people, look, I'm the only guy in Sydney, Nebraska that never worked for them.
right.
But huge respect for how the company was built.
Yes.
And, you know, another episode would be what happened to them. So to fund the growth and to build these big destination stores, they went public.
Yes.
And that eventually is what led to the downfall of them as a company.
Yeah.
They're still a brand, but as a company, they don't really exist anymore.
We could certainly explore that, you know, but the amazing thing is that whole idea of this really creating the experience, attracting people, but that first copywriting experience, look, that shaped their copywriting through their entire catalog with that experience.
It's all about the offer. All about the offer.
Yeah. That's cool.
So
thanks for sharing this story, Dave.
Yeah. I love talking about Cabela's.
It's an amazing, amazing, amazing history there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, David.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please share us, subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and leave us a big, fat, juicy 5-star rating and review at Apple Podcasts. And if you'd like to schedule your own 90-minute empire-building session, you can do it at empirebuildingprogram.com.